Hey, how's it going out there? It's Progressive Radio Network. My name's Mark Farrell. The show is Insight. It's Thursday in New York City. Love this time of year. It still hasn't really gotten incredibly hot consistently. A couple days here and there, but I'm digging it. Hey, we got a great show for you today. Two incredible guests coming your way. One is named Greta Schwartz. Greta did something that I've never heard of before, and she's captured the attention of millions in the world for mental health. And we're going to talk to her in a bit. We're also going to hear from a woman who's a self-proclaimed sanitation engineer. Check this out. Chef, chauffeur, conflict resolution guru. And for her very frequent clients, her children, they think she pretty much rocks. She's Christina Kuzmic, and she's phenomenal. She's a YouTube sensation. YouTube launched her into fandom. I should say stardom. And then Oprah, a little person named Oprah. Yeah, you know, the OWN network, the queen of media. She took a liking to her as well. We're going to meet her because she's got a great, uncanny perspective on many, many things, including child rearing, cooking, life in general, and even for marriage. So we'll be speaking to Christina in just a bit. So last time we spoke, I was telling you about something I was doing in New York City for the Out of the Darkness overnight walk for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And it was really, really cool. I told you I was going to be doing the walk in New York City, starting at the Intrepid, of course, an iconic ship, and going to be going 16 miles across the Brooklyn Bridge, back across around the tip of Manhattan. But more importantly, it wasn't for the legendary landmarks. It was to raise critical funding, education, awareness for research in mental illness, depression, anxiety, all the fun, nice little things that fit under the mental illness umbrella. So this was my third one. The first one I did was in 2002, which actually was the first one in Washington, D.C., which was really cool, really hot. It was like 85 in the middle of the night. So Out of the Darkness overnight walk is just that. It actually takes place at dusk, because the metaphor is dusk into darkness, into light. So you're coming out of your depression. So the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention launched this in 2002 in Washington, D.C., and it was supposed to be 26 miles, and I think they mismarked the course, and I ended up doing 28 miles, me and a few other people. But anyway, it was great. Then I did the next one a couple years later in New York City, I think in 2007, which was also very, very cool. All of these I've done by myself. And the reason is usually because I first of all, I hate asking people to donate money. And number two, I feel uncomfortable asking people to join me, because then obviously they have to ask other people for a donation. So therein lies the point why I walk alone. But do I really walk alone? No, I really don't, because there are so many people, thousands of people walking along, sharing the same effort, that they're totally into it. And I get to know these people. I mean, I've forged some great relationships in the middle of the night, in the middle of like nowhere. It's been great. I really, really loved it. I remember being in, I was across the Potomac, Virginia, Arlington, Virginia, probably like 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm sitting here walking by myself in this totally pitch dark neighborhood. They give you some lights to put on your arms and et cetera, flashlights. Then I came across some people and I probably walked, I don't know, 8 or 10 miles with them. And, you know, it's just amazing the bonds you can develop seemingly instantaneously because of the shared maybe loss that someone in your life died by suicide. I walked for my brother, Michael Farrell, who took his life in 1992. And so whether either people were directly affected, a sibling, a parent, which is the worst, cousin, friend, colleague, or just the mere fact that most of us in our lives will be touched by depression. I think it's 2 out of 5 will experience a severe bout of depression in your life, which, you know, is a little bit daunting. But the thing is, which the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention is doing nowadays, is educating people so you know what to do, you know what symptoms to expect, and what to do and how to reach out to people. So it's kind of like having a toolbox. You know, you got all the tools in place, or a first aid kit. You may never crack it open, but if you do need to crack it open, it's right there. Bam, for your disposal. So it's pretty cool. So I started doing this walk, And I said to my wife, you want to do it? And she didn't have time to train with her hectic work schedule. So I didn't train because 16 miles from me walking, I didn't think it was going to be a big deal. And so the day came 2 weeks ago on a Saturday. It was a beautiful day at the Intrepid Sea, Air, and Space Museum. They had a really good crowd. I think there were 2,600 or 2,800 people. Everyone's kind of lingering around the docks, hanging out on the pier, listening to some great music. Everything's kind of great, kind of buzz in the air. And now when you think of like a suicide prevention walk, you think of like, oh, it's going to be a downer. Lots of tissues, lots of tears to be shed. But no, quite the opposite, my friends. All these people, think about a person who's going to do a walk such as this. Like, you have to be pretty doggone. Did I just say doggone? I did. Oh, my God. I can't believe I said that. Selfless to do something like this. You can't be really into yourself to walk 16 miles, number one, and to be part of a movement to reduce suicide. As a matter of fact, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention is doing a lofty, lofty goal that by 2025, they want to reduce the amount of suicide by, oh, my God, I forgot the stat. It's pretty lofty. I had Dr. Christine, I forgot her last name, from the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention on here a couple weeks ago, and she mentioned that to me. So I'll get back to you with that stat. But it's really, really, it's a great goal to go for. As a matter of fact, this past week, this week actually, they're still in D.C. Presenting advocacy to a lot of legislators, and I applaud the board members and all the members of AFSP nationally for going down to D.C. And really touching upon a vital, vital aspect, a little bit of a sidebar, especially considering what took place last week in Orlando. How many shootings, massacres are we talking about that are done by people who are mentally ill? They're acquiring, they're attaining these guns that are not for civilian use. And people who are far from rational, from sane, are getting their hands on these guns. Now, I'm going a little bit of a tangent here from the walk, but it's all kind of part and parcel here. So anyway, it's interesting timing that they are there this week, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention for Mental Illness Advocacy, to get bills passed, more funding, et cetera, because it's vital. It's vital, man. I say it's vital. So I'm on the pier. The music's pumping, and it's a great vibe, and I was very happy to be part of the walk. I know a lot of the members there. My mother is actually a board member in New Jersey of the New Jersey chapter, and my sister Nancy, full disclosure here, is the actual head of the board, director of the board, I'm not sure the title, of the National Foundation. So our family, you know, we didn't ask to be part of this world, but we got catapulted into this world back in 1992 when my brother jumped off a 40-story building. So you can't save somebody's from after they're gone, but you can try to obviously right the wrong. Obviously, the grief lives on, the sorrow lives on. So we try to make do and help other people out. Why not, right? I mean, why are we here on earth if we can't make good things happen for other people and leave a legacy for everyone else? Because doing good is, I think, that's my religion. It's the do-good religion. People say, well, are you Catholic or are you Protestant? My religion is decency. There's no church for that, by the way. It can take place in a bar, on a bicycle, in a strip club. No, I'm sorry. I didn't say any of those. But, you know, if there were a church of decency, it's wherever you are because you just are decent wherever you go. So anyway, the walk is just about to embark. They got some speakers up on stage, and they always go on just a little bit too long. But anyway, they had some good things to say. And so it starts to rain. Oh, man, are you kidding me? It's raining. I'm like, oh, no, everyone's bumming. But it was like a little bit of a trickle. It was warm, so it kind of cooled things off. I was like, all right, a bit of a welcome relief. And my sister had gotten these great T-shirts made up in 2007 of my brother Mike, a picture of him and his name, and we're walking from Mike, et cetera, and it's a cotton T-shirt. So I'm like, unfortunately, I had to take this shirt off because a cotton T-shirt in the rain is just going to stay wet forever. So I switched off my T-shirt to like one of those dry-fit Nike shirts. And as soon as they, you know, have this great send-off, the music's pumping, the executive director, Bob, is saying, good luck, have a fantastic walk, 16 miles, thank you for your time, your energy, your donation, everything. And then the cloud and the skies just open up, a complete deluge. I've walked like 500 feet so far with 26 or 2,800 people, and we are completely soaked. Soaked as if I had just been picked up by the top of my head, dunked in a pool, and put back on the pavement. So now my goal was, and I had told you this, what my plan was, I had all this recording equipment, and I was going to interview and have some great conversations with people about, you know, why they're walking, what brought them there, had they lost somebody, have they experienced any mental illness themselves? Like, what's the core of the reason why they're there? I mean, not your everyday person is going to get up one day and say, you know what? I'm kind of bored today. I think I'm going to walk 16 miles and for a charity and then raise $1,000, get $1,000 for my friends, family, and coworkers, et cetera. And yeah, it seems like a cool, fun thing to do. Oh, yeah, by the way, I'll be sleep deprived because it takes place overnight. So not that many people do that. So anyway, so that was my goal. I presented it to you. Yes, yeah, so I'm going to come back with all this great audio and this stuff, these stories, these like very intimate, personal stories that I'm going to be recording at like 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning, walking across the Brooklyn Bridge. It'll be great. And I'd love to say to Jesse, my engineer right now, play that clip, but I can't because I didn't record a single goddamn thing. Because it rained. It was crazy. It was nuts. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry that it rained because I was really going to make a great show and obviously touch more people's lives because people like to share their stories, etc. So I'm so, so sorry. I have not one piece of audio to play you. I mean, I could play you some crowd noises and the speeches, but you don't want to hear that. I was going to play you some really cool, intimate stuff. Some riveting stories, some conversations that would have made you felt like you actually walked those 60 miles. And that would have inspired you to walk next year in 2017 in Washington, D.C. But we can't do that. But you can still walk next year, so I'm sorry. So here's what I did. I had to change plans right away. So it started, you know, crazy, crazy, crazy rain sideways. I got a backpack on, shorts, sneakers, socks. So I'm completely wet. So what I did was it was cold too because it's whipping down. You're on the west side on the promenade. So I put my head down, I put my hands in my pants, and just started walking as fast as I could possibly walk. Kept doing it. Next thing you know, I don't know how many miles later, I was in the front. So I'm like, all right, you know what? This is my plan. My original plan was to go out and enjoy this. As I mentioned, I'd like to get to know people, etc. But I revised that plan. Scrap. New plan. The new plan was to walk as fast as I could to get this goddamn thing over with. Because who wants to walk 16 miles in completely saturated socks and sneakers? I don't care about my shorts and t-shirt. But your socks and shoes. I mean, I've run marathons, done plenty of triathlons. You start blistering up, forget it, you are done. Chances are if you don't have any Band-Aids, whatever, you know, it could be crippling. It sounds like, you know, how could a blister cripple you? It can. It's really, really brutal. So I kept walking, walking, walking fast. And I met this other three people. They were great. And they had the same idea as me. They're like, we like this walk and everything it stands for, but we just want to get this year over with. So we're just trucking. As a matter of fact, we're trucking so much. When we got to like a rest stop, I think we're the fourth people in there. There have been four people before us that they said, oh, my God, you know, I can't believe you guys are here so fast. I'm like, hey, you know, I'm looking for some bananas, some, you know, oranges. And the people I was with, they're like, let's go. I'm like, wait a minute. So at this point, I'm like, all right, I'll just hang out with them because they can help me navigate the course, too, because in New York City, there's all these different signs everywhere. And now I'm supposed to look for these little red signs for the out of the darkness overnight walk, which was a little daunting and hard for me to visually see. So anyway, I hung out with these people. We walk across the bridge, and the halfway point, it's at like it's like 11 o'clock at night. We're making killer time. I never walked across the Brooklyn Bridge. Stunning. Very majestic. The whole city is aglow. Brooklyn, New York City, unbelievable. And then at the halfway point when we having dinner, I just wanted to stop and sit down and at least have a sandwich, you know, peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I actually never knew peanut butter and jelly came in a pre-made sandwich. Newsflash. Hello, Mark. Welcome. It was actually pretty good. Anyway, I was forbidden to sit down and eat. They're like, come on, Mark, let's go. We got to make good time. So that's what I did. I kept walking, walking, walking. P.S. We finished at, I think, 12:05, started walking at 7:35, 40-ish, and finished at 12 o'clock, 12:05. We were like the sixth, seventh, and eighth persons to cross the finish line. Now, mind you, this is not a race at all, any stretch of the imagination. This is a walk, a benefit walk, to raise awareness and critical funds. But, you know, with those conditions out there, we all had the same, well, a lot of people did, the same motive was just to kind of get it over with because, you know, man, you don't want to hang out with wet shoes and socks and get all blistered up. So like the last 2 miles, the blisters started really coming out. So I was cool. I was fine. Certainly, I'm a tough guy and toughing it out for my brother Mike and for everyone else who suffered from mental illness and will suffer because as a cohesive group, nation, human race, you know, we can do something about this. We can change this. And so if you're interested, check out AFSP.org for American Foundation for Suicide Prevention.org, AFSP.org. So the last part of the story was about 12:05 I finished. About 12:15, I was in a bar on 9th Avenue between 43rd and 44th called Dalton's, having a really, really cold cocktail and ordered mozzarella sticks. That was the way I wrapped up my... And at the bar, I took off my sneakers and socks because nobody knew. I'm at a bar. And I had a beautiful blonde with a nice Irish brogue say, oh, it's great. I can't do it. It's great what you did, Mark. I can't do a brogue. It's great what you did. Anyway, so it was fun. I urge you, and I'm sorry about not having audio for you. But next time, I promise, in D.C., maybe we'll walk together. Maybe we'll have a Progressive Radio Network team. So our first guest today, the Huffington Post has referred to Christina's videos as parenting comedy at its finest. She's become a YouTube sensation with her mom-centric videos about raising children and juggling all of life's challenges. She's obsessed with creativity, as you can tell. She's hysterical, as in like an in-your-face perspective on issues of parenting and life in general, even for couples, which is great. We'll talk about that. With millions of viewers, it's certainly likely that you probably have seen Christina on your Facebook feed or on radio and TV or on right here on the Progressive Radio Network, which is very cool is young millennials to Gen Xers and even baby boomers are flocking to Christina. And I heard of her about 2 months ago. I guess it was on my Facebook feed. Not sure. But I saw a video that she produced, and it was about I'm not your friend, kid, because I love you. And I have to give a little bit of a sidebar this morning that I was incredibly late, so I wasn't even sure if we have that audio. Do we have that audio? I can't hear what you say. You feel free to come in here and talk to me here. So we have some audio that we're going to be trying to play. Do we have it?
This is how it all started.
Okay, this is how we all started. So this is actually a good intro to Christina Kuzmic. So we're going to hear Christina's first video that she did, and we'll jump back in and tell you a little bit more right after this here.
Hey, I'm Christina, also known as Sticky Cook. I am 31 years old, full-time mommy, part-time waitress. Here's the plan. Mark and Oprah, this is what we're doing. We are showing people that cooking is not a chore. It's an adventure. You ready for this? Bacon. Brown sugar. Finely chopped almonds. Yeah. I just did that. You saw correctly. Stretch it out, and here we go again. We're gonna give people new, creative, fun ideas in the kitchen. And then what we're gonna do is roll it. My kids like to eat it rolled up like this. Cute, right? Yeah. We are going to instill a passion in people for eating good. Homemade food from scratch, no preservatives. Oh, look at that! Look at that! And we're gonna teach people responsibility in the kitchen because cooking is dangerous. I arrange it so that I can easily access, okay, from the heat to the ice for my burn. And, ow, ow, ow! Ice.
I thought you were going to break into an ice baby there. Christina Kuzmic, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
You sound bubbly as ever.
Oh, I'm trying to be. I'm 3 hours earlier than you.
Was it a frenzy-free morning for you? Do you have like a yucky brooch that comes from throw-up on your lapel or something?
You know, if you saw me right now, I look like I've been through war, but I'm good. My daughter actually had like 3 friends sleep over, so it's been a crazy morning in my house.
Oh, my. Are they still there?
Oh, yeah, they're there, and I'm hiding in my car to talk to you in peace and quiet.
Are you kidding me? This is a video in its works right here.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
You know, I could do all my videos from my car. It would be much easier.
Is this the new car that Oprah gave you?
It actually is, yes.
Fantastic.
I love it.
Yeah, oh, my God, the video that I saw of you, you were a complete elation. And the fact that these cars, it's pretty funny. The funniest part was you're hysterical on many levels. But the car guys at the dealership, they're so typical car guys. Bad shirts, shoes, you know, trousers, and
yep.
Didn't know what to say or act. And they're trying to tell you, like, real functions of the car. You're like, come on, be funny, loosen up. I'm giving you material here, man.
Honestly, God. I didn't even care. The crazy thing about that story was, so I won the car from Oprah because I won this show, right? That she gave me a TV show, basically.
Correct.
And, what happened is when I went into this competition, I wasn't told that whoever wins would win a car. My car was dying. And so my husband and I had this talk before I left. We're like, we got to figure out our finances. Can we just live on one car, which is almost impossible in Los Angeles. So it was like this stressful situation. And so for her to surprise me with a car, she didn't even know that backstory, was just like one of those perfect timing things.
That's incredible. It's amazing how things get paid forward, right?
Oh, my gosh. Amazing. Yeah.
So, Christina, how did this all come about? I know you came through a divorce that probably was not the prettiest of divorces. And how did you create this niche for yourself that's really been paying off well for you?
You know, I went through a really just tough time, tough divorce, really depressed. I was broke. I literally could not afford a bed. I shared a room with my kids and I slept next to their bunk beds. My friends bought their bunk beds because I couldn't even afford that. So, finally, after some years, got into a better place emotionally and eventually met my husband, got remarried, my second husband. And just a few weeks after our wedding, my husband said to me, you know, what do you want to do? Because you've been on this survival mode, just trying to, you know, survive as a single mother on your own with the 2 kids. And I said, I don't know what I want to do. And he handed me his car keys and he said, go. I'll take care of the kids. I'll take care of dinner. Just go somewhere where you can think. Go away from the stress and figure out what you want to do.
You married a good guy.
Oh, he's so awesome.
Cool dude.
And I came back like 5 hours later and I was like, you know what? I feel like when I was going through my hard time, the only thing I was confident in was my cooking. And so I want to do something with cooking. So I made these silly little cooking videos and within a month was sort of basically, I hate to use the word, but discovered by Mark Burnett and Oprah. Ended up entering this competition, winning it, having a cooking show on Oprah's network. And then since then, I sort of realized that even though I love cooking and it's a big passion, my bigger passion really is just trying to figure out this whole parenting thing because it's freaking hard. And
it
so
is.
Then I started making parenting videos, and this is where my heart's really at.
So there's so many different interesting things that you just mentioned. Let's go back to kind of the ugly, dark place where, you know, a lot of people are, and definitions, you know, vary from person to person, experience to experience. But when you're going through that time, you actually were feeling extremely depressed. As a matter of fact, you wrote a great article that kind of really solidifies it, broken but not worthless. And I'm going to read an excerpt of this. I was depressed as my doctor suggested all kinds of pills, depressed as in my friends were a little more than worried about me. Depressed, I gained 20 pounds in 1 month. That's a lot of Nutella.
Yeah.
You know you're a mess when your doctor is handing you a brochure of antidepressants and brochure of Weight Watchers, etc. And I was struggling financially, understatement. I was broke, sleeping on the floor, as you mentioned. I was lonely. I was really, really lonely and in a bitter, angry, and confused, and cynical, miserable. And yes, those are all just understatements too. So we all have been in dark places. And I thank you for sharing that with everyone because you know some people are just really embarrassed and take it personally as a failure. And you did as well, correct?
Yes. I mean, I felt, oh my gosh, I got teary-eyed just reading that, even though I wrote it and I know the words, but just, it kind of takes me back to that place. I just felt like such a loser. And I think that's kind of typical after, I mean, went through a divorce, I'm broke, I, you know, like I said, I'm depressed. And then it doesn't help that you have all these people judging you, because a lot of people judge. And so you're already feeling like a loser, and then you have extra people making you feel like a loser.
And more importantly, and so, sorry to interrupt, but kids depending on you.
Yes. And that's where I felt like a failure. I felt like, I'm so depressed. I'm in such a bad place. I can't even, like, my kids don't even have, like, their own space. I'm sharing, their mom is sharing a room with them. Like, just all these things piled up. We were on food stamps. You know, I was just thinking the other day, I had a friend who worked at Starbucks. And Starbucks throws away their food when it gets stale. Obviously, they can't sell, you know, pastries that are fresh. And he asked his manager, I know this single mom, she's really struggling. Can I give her the food that we're going to throw away? And so he would give my kids and I, like, these stale muffins and pastries. And a lot of people listening to this will go, ew, gross. I mean, they weren't moldy. They were fine.
Of course.
But I
yeah.
look back on that time, and I actually, like, I love that memory. I think it's such a neat, you know, thing to say about the manager and my friend who even thought of that. Mm. And my kids and I sitting there eating these stale muffins. And you know what? We were fine. That's all we needed at the time. We didn't need anything fancy.
And
yes,
the life lesson.
It was
lesson,
a very tough time.
It's phenomenal. And you didn't have to buy an 8-hour cup of coffee either.
Exactly, yes.
And, well, the cool part about that is, on so many levels, Christina, is that no matter how low you felt that you were, and maybe that was your rock bottom, certainly, you felt like, you know, you still had something to offer. And you thought, what can I do? How can I pull myself out of this, like, place of self-pity, maybe morbid thoughts, suicidal thoughts, everything that, you know, surrounds that dark cloud that you're under. And you realize that if I can help somebody else, maybe this will catapult me out of this depth of this, like, dark, insider, ugly place where I'm at.
Yeah, I realized that I was, like, almost obsessed with myself. I don't know if that makes sense. I feel like sometimes
sure.
when you're depressed, all you can think about is, like, woe is me, life is so hard, you know? And so I realized I got to start thinking about other people, because this is going to kill me. Like, I am self-consumed right now, and it's bad. And so I realized the only thing I knew how to do is cook. And so I sent this email to all my, you know, all the people I knew in LA. And I said, I didn't even think this through, by the way, this was way impulsive. And I said, every Wednesday night, I will feed people in my little apartment. If you know anyone who's homeless, if you know anybody who's, like, just new to town and lonely, if you know, like, an older man who just lost his wife and just wants some company, bring them to my apartment. Every Wednesday, I will feed them.
I love it.
And I started doing these Wednesday night dinners, and it literally, I call it my antidepressant, because it made me go, holy crap, like, I'm not totally worthless.
Yeah.
Like, I actually have something to offer even at my lowest. That's nuts.
So you wrote after the last guest left on that first night, you shut the door and you kind of, in a good way, just totally sobbed because you had this epiphany, but and also a breakthrough.
Oh my gosh. I will never forget that. I closed the door and my body literally fell to the floor and I just sobbed.
Wow.
And it was like the kind of sobbing, like almost like a, I don't want to sound cheesy, but almost like a healing sobbing, like, you know.
Sure.
And then I got up off that floor. Again, don't mean to sound all dramatic, but I felt like I got up off that floor after that big sob, a different person. I was still sad. I was still struggling. I was still stressed out, but I didn't feel completely defeated.
Absolutely, which so many people do, but you made the important thing is that you made that crucial, this gargantuan first step and into recovery for yourself, whatever that outlet was. And then that actually steamrolled to, you know, meeting your second husband, your future husband then, which we'll talk about, you know, a pivotal moment in your life when you realized that he was the one for you at 3 o'clock in the morning. But
right.
when he said to you, you know, go think about what you want to do. And this really was your foray into what you've become.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I chose cooking, because I thought cooking literally saved me. Cooking those dinners for those strangers saved me. I don't know. I seriously think I probably would have ended up in a mental institution. I don't even want to think about where I would have ended up if I hadn't sort of just decided to do something for others.
So when you made this video that we played at the head of the show here, and you got the call that you're in this contest, were you floored?
I thought it was a joke. So when the Mark Burnett's casting producer called me, I ended up Googling him for like 2 hours, the producer.
That's hysterical.
So I was like, this is not for real. I got to do some research on this guy. Someone's playing a prank on me. And then even further so to be like face-to-face with Mark Burnett and then face-to-face with Oprah. And I literally felt like this is a Cinderella story. Like a few years ago, I had nothing. I had homeless shelters on my, you know, phone save because I thought any day now, I'm not going to be able to pay rent and I got to find a place to stay. I don't want to live on the street with my kids.
You were close to dumpster diving.
Yeah, exactly. To go from that to sitting face to face with Oprah and her handing me a new car, I'm like, wow, life is really crazy.
And then to come full circle to winning the contest.
Yes, that was unbelievable.
Did you feel like you had a chance?
No. I went in feeling like that any second now they're going to figure out that I have no experience in TV and that they probably made a mistake.
But so what have you been doing? Like, you have such an effervescent personality. You're a natural, gregarious, affable person. Has this been something that's always been present in your life? Has the arts been part of your life, acting or anything of that nature?
Well, I did a lot of acting as a kid, not, you know, just theater and stuff. I grew up in Croatia. So I just did little plays and things. And then during the war in Croatia, my family actually moved to the States. So I came here as a high schooler and ended up joining theater again, mostly because I didn't fit anywhere. Like, I was the weird kid with the accent and came from a different culture and didn't have cool clothes. And theater's kind of the place where everybody fits in. So I did that and ended up studying theater in college, but never really pursued acting. I mean, I did some plays and things after college, but never fully pursued it. Got married way too young, ended up having kids right away. And so sort of shift my focus to being a mom. And then unfortunately, you know, the divorce and everything.
And in Croatia, that was a pivotal time because when you're very, very young, I think around 8 years old, a war obviously erupted. And you remember your grandmother saying, or your father and mother coming home saying, listen, lay down on the floor because, you know, there are bombs going off, grenades going off.
Yeah, I was actually 12 years old, and my sister and I were watching a New Kids on the Block video, I'll never forget it, on TV. And all of a sudden, I heard my parents just rushing down the stairs. They were carrying my younger sister. And they were yelling at my older sister and I, get on the floor, get on the floor, get on the floor. And I remember my whole family flat on the floor in the living room and them just saying, okay, life's going to be a little different now. A war is starting and, you know, things are about to change. So, yeah, it was it's a traumatic thing to go through at 12 years old to all of a sudden stuff you've only seen in movies is happening in real life.
I mean, just think about that, Christina. All those years ago, also when you were in the kitchen, I think your grandmother is the first one who taught you how to make soup, tomato soup.
Yeah.
To here you are in 2016. I mean, you've really, really built a life for yourself. And listen, you know it. You're a smart person that a lot of times it takes failure to realize what you have within yourself, what you're capable of. Especially when you have feelings like you don't fit in. Like, I grew up with a very rare visual impairment. I speak to audience all over the nation outside the radio spectrum about overcoming adversity. And there's so many different characteristics that make us all strong and different. And my mantra is, my difference makes me stronger. And it's so interesting to see how it applies and how people can use it to benefit themselves, to propel themselves in life.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like sometimes that's the only choice we have in life, right? Like, I couldn't choose to grow up in a different country where there wouldn't be a war. I didn't really have much choice that, you know, about being so broke and depressed after my divorce. But the choice we have is our attitude. How, no matter what life throws our way, we can't choose those things, right? That life is throwing our way, but we can choose how we deal with those things.
Absolutely. Well said. I had a therapist once that said, you know, we can't change the way we think, but we can change the way we react.
Yes.
Which is so true.
And honestly, that's a big thing I'm teaching my kids, especially my oldest now. He's, you know, a junior higher, and he's going through all the, you know, sort of typical teen stuff. And he's kind of
my condolences, Christina.
What?
My condolences.
No kidding. It's so much harder than anybody expects. But I keep telling him, like, dude, you can't control everything, but you can control your reaction.
Exactly.
To it.
Exactly.
And that is so powerful. That can make or break your life, how you react to things.
And this is a perfect segue into your video, I'm Not Your Friend, Kid, Because I Love You, which is so good, and here's a portion of that.
Okay. All three of my kids are mad at me right now for, like, completely different, unrelated reasons. All three are mad at me right now. For those of you who struggle with math, that means that 100% of my children are angry with me right now. And you know what? I don't care. I don't care. You know why? Because I am not their buddy. I am their parent. They are angry at me because I parented them. My number one job as their parent is to love them. And loving them does not mean making sure they're always happy and get every single little thing they want. Loving them means raising them into healthy, decent human beings who I would actually want.
So very true. Now, we got to paint the picture here because that video, the visuals are amazing. Now, Christina Kuzmic is sitting there at a counter. Camera's on her, single shot. There is a gallon of ice cream. What flavor would that be, Christina?
That was vanilla bean, only because I already ran out of chocolate.
Now, you gave me a major, major education on Nutella. Nutella's there, and also hysterically placed at the very end of the video, red wine into the half gallon of ice cream.
Yeah.
So you go through this whole melting down, but also building yourself up scenario.
Yes.
I love it. And it's so true because I don't know what it is with, can you break it down, the psychologist of yourself, why parents feel they need to be their friends?
Okay. Some parents are going to hate me for this, but I honestly think it comes out of a personal insecurity of, you know, we all want to be liked, right?
Mm, sure.
I mean, that's normal. Every human wants to be liked. But when you let your need to be liked all the time by your child be more important than thinking long-term of raising a good, decent human being, that's when things get bad, I think. And that's what I feel like there are so many, you know, people talk about bratty kids. I think there's a lot of bratty adults. And I think it's because their parents were like, oh, please like me, please like me. If you're mad at me, I won't go through with that consequence. I just want to be liked by you.
Absolutely.
So I always tell parents, you know what? Stop being so insecure and desperate for your kids to like you and find friends your own age. Like, what are you doing? You're 40 years old and your best friend's with, like, a six-year-old? That's just creepy. That's weird.
Hey, you can't go drinking with them, so they can't be my friend.
No. And you know, I've had parents since that video be like, well, I think you can be friends with your kid. And I'm like, we must have a different definition.
Sure.
Because it's not just about, you know, like you said, going and grabbing a drink and all that. If I'm having, let's say, an issue in my marriage, and I go and I open up to my kid, who
so
is my
wrong.
Quote-unquote friend about that, that is practically child abuse. Like, you don't put that stress
no.
on your kid.
No, you don't.
So,
yeah.
No, you cannot be a parent and a friend.
So,
so
well said. I have a six-year-old and a three-year-old, and you know, you get that line every month or so. I'm not your friend. I said, you know, I got such a better title in life than your friend. I'm your parent, and my three jobs
yes.
are to keep you safe, love you, and educate you. I'm not your friend. I'm never going to be your friend. We're friendly to each other. We pal around. We have good times, but I have such a better title than a friend.
Yes. I actually wrote an article on my website called Fun Strict Parenting. And it sort of was my, like, I just sat down one day and I was like, what's my parenting philosophy? And I just wrote and wrote. And it perfectly describes that, you know, perfect balance, right, of being strict, being a parent,
mm-hmm.
not giving in when you shouldn't give in, but still making your kid's life fun, you know, doing fun, spontaneous things. It's not like if you're not your kid's friend, they're not growing up in a fun-loving home. It's not a dictatorship. There should be that balance of I'm the boss. I'm in charge, but if you can obey my rules, we're going to have a blast.
Oh, yeah, which you do. I mean, you're just a naturally fun person. And this is Christina Kuzmic on the phone with me. Her website is Christina, KUZMIC.com, KUZMIC.com. Again, first name Christina. She's a self-proclaimed sanitation engineer, chef, author, chauffeur, conflict resolutioner, you name it. You know, you've done it all. So let me ask you, the videos you've done are so incredible, and I urge our listeners to check out her website, ChristineKuzmic.com, as I just mentioned to you. Check out all her videos, and they're hysterical. I can't wait to show them. I was up. So a typical parent night, right? You can appreciate this. So my one, my daughter, who I call her the flamethrower because she's crazy but incredibly cute as well. So she, you know, reminds me five times a day how much I love her. So she coaxes me into fall asleep with her. Now I wake up 1 a.m. So I'm asleep, awake from 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. this morning, watching your videos and doing other research for other guests I have.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm laughing at you going, it's 5 a.m. You're in the bathroom. You're turning the shower on, eating ice cream, pretending you're taking a shower to hide from the kids. Just so many different parallels that parents can relate to on so many levels. But the fact that you can strip away some valuable points and messaging is incredible. And I find it very, very compelling. And now, did you find this from just being a bright person through trial and error? Or was this also something that your parents instilled as a parenting mechanism that they used on you?
You know, my mom was a great mom. And unfortunately, like most kids, I didn't realize it till I was older. You know, I was always like, my mom is too strict, and my mom, you know, my mom's rules are different than my friend's mom's rules. And now I think, oh my gosh, if she, like, just going back to what we talked about a little bit ago, if my mom hadn't raised me the way she did, I don't know that I would have survived the divorce and that depression, all that. I mean, she raised me to be strong, you know, not cold, not, but strong, and to let myself feel emotions and to know how to deal with them. And so she had a great influence on me. And then also, I'm one of those people that's like very much a problem solver and a go-getter. So when there's a challenge with one of my children, I seriously like think of what is the most creative way I can deal with this. And especially now with my teenager, I always think, okay, Christina, what did you need at 13? What did you need at 13? Because I think, you know, I have to think as a parent, but I also want to go, what does he need right now? What is this whole thing that he's throwing about? You know, and so I guess my brain's just working nonstop. I don't get much sleep, let's put it that way.
Well, you know, it really pays dividends because the videos are really witty. Now, do you script those or are those pretty much off the cuff?
I pick a topic. Oh, I mean, the one that you just did played, I'm Not Your Friend, Kid, Because I Love You, all three of my kids were mad at me, and I was like, I'm shutting myself in a room, and I am talking about this.
That's great.
So that one was not scripted at all. Some of them I just kind of come up with the topic, and then I just sit down and talk for 20 minutes, and then I cut it down into, you know, three-minute
really
video.
Well done.
No one wants to watch 20 minutes.
Do you do all the editing yourself?
I do everything myself.
Well,
and I do it usually while my youngest one is napping. So
I got to compliment you from a creative director standpoint. I've been doing audio for 20-some-odd years, et cetera. The way you put the music in there and cut it, it really punctuates, obviously, what you're trying to get across, or maybe not get across because it's just simply hysterical.
Thank you.
So listen, you just mentioned a point about your son, and here's a quick video, which I really applaud you guys on, about bullying.
Four ways to deal with a bully. Advice from my son. Your favorite son.
Gulp.
Right? Number one, the first step in dealing with a bully is being confident. Confidence doesn't mean you're trying to be better than everyone else. It means you're being the best you can be. Once you're proud of who you are, it doesn't matter what other people think of you. Think of it this way. I love barbecue sauce. I love it so much. If I'm eating barbecue sauce and someone says, ew, barbecue sauce is stupid, that doesn't affect how I feel about it. I still love it. So if someone says to my face, ew, you're stupid, just like barbecue sauce, that doesn't affect the way I feel about myself. I know I'm not stupid. You're like barbecue sauce. Not everybody's going to like you.
Well done, Christina. Great messaging.
Thank you. He's a good kid.
Yeah. It seems like you guys have a really good time. Great rapport as well. And we should also mention that all the topics don't have to relate to parenting. Four ways to keep your marriage fun. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time to get into this, but talk quickly about the first date night.
Oh, right. So my husband and I were trying to think of a way to keep things fresh and, you know, fun. So we decided we would go on these first dates, and randomly out of the blue, and I'm not expecting it, he'll text me and he'll say, this is Philip. And obviously I know my husband's name. So if the text starts that way, I know to play along. And he'll say, it was great meeting you the other day. Any chance you'd be willing to have dinner with me this Friday night? And so that Friday, he'll come home from work and he'll say, oh, I have plans with my buddies. And I'll say, okay, great, have fun. He'll leave. And he comes back, knocks on my door.
I love it.
At our door, and pretends he's picking me up for a first date. And we go out and we literally play it up. I mean, we take our rings off. You know, if we sit at the bartender totally believes we're on a first date.
That's great.
You know, but you end up asking questions you don't ask in normal life. You're not asking, oh, did you pick up the milk? you're asking things that you haven't asked in years, and you're learning new things, and then at the end you have this hot first kiss, and it feels like a first kiss because you've played it up. It's seriously, I recommend it for any couple.
Yeah, it's a very cool, easy role play situation.
Yes.
And, you know, I would imagine, and also you're fun. Your husband looks very fun. Obviously, you're very fun and whimsical in a good way. So I would imagine you guys can easily just roll into, you know, any scenario and just have a good time with it.
Yeah, we're a good team. He definitely, we complement each other well.
And it seems like you have great communication as well.
Yes, that's so important.
Awesome. So listen, everyone, check out her videos. Christina Kuzmic, K-U-Z-M-I-C, Christina Kuzmic.
And Christina is with a K.
Sorry, yes, I'm sorry. I was remiss in saying that. Christina with a K, Kuzmic.com. And how do you decide, lastly, on what videos, it's kind of like what's happening in your life, what to produce next for people?
I totally let life dictate it.
Very cool.
So this latest one I made is an apology to dads. I want all the dads to check it out. You'll really appreciate it.
And the last thing I want to say that put the like cork in the bottle for me that kind of solidified that you're hysterical is that you, I guess, were pregnant with your last child and felt like you were going to end world hunger by breastfeeding and by going up in a helicopter and putting those big things outside like guns and just squirting everybody. I love it.
You know, you have some crazy thoughts when you're that hormonal.
Yeah.
I could solve world hunger with my boobs.
That's great. That's great. I love it. Lactation for everybody. Christina, thank you so much for your time and great job and keep up the hysterical, well-messaged work.
Thank you so much for having me. It was an honor.
You rock. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
So I mentioned earlier that there was a woman, Greta Schwartz, that did something remarkable, and Greta's joining us on the phone from New Jersey to tell us about that. Hey, Greta.
Hey, how are you?
Thank you so much for your patience today.
Sure.
So we've been talking about couple shows about Mental Health Awareness Month, which was last month, but, you know, Mental Health Awareness Month is every month and every day, right?
Absolutely.
So now
it's not like anybody gets a day off.
Exactly. Very good. Very well said. Now, you took the bull by the horns because you are tired of people dying in your life around you by suicide. And you did something very, very bold. You decided to walk like I walked recently. I'm not sure if you were listening previously to the earlier episode, but I walked 60 miles for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and that's an organized walk to raise awareness, funds, et cetera. You did something very, very, a little bit more risque, clever, bold, that got the attention of millions. You walked 80-some-odd miles across New Jersey. Where you live, is it Seaview, New Jersey?
Seaville,
New Jersey, to the nation's capital, or New Jersey's capital, Trenton, New Jersey. And you did something very interesting. You pulled a casket.
Yep.
How did you come up with this notion?
As you said, I had a couple years of, unfortunately, being thrown into the debacle that is the mental health industry, especially regarding children in our country. It really kind of started with the suicide of two students and from our school district. In under a year, both hung themselves, and they were friends of one of my children. And there were numerous attempts that came out in the aftermath of other kids. So it was very eye-opening, very scary. I started paying more attention to what was going on, and I attended a conference with Patrick Kennedy, who I'm not sure if you're aware, but
sure.
he's an advocate for mental health mm-hmm. and really
staunch advocate, really yeah, staunch
trying
advocate.
To overhaul. So at this conference, he said, you know, the only way we're going to make a difference is to stand up and get loud and make our voices heard. And I have a theater background, so I have no problem standing up in front of people and getting loud. So I really wanted to do something. And I had initially started out contacting organizations, some large, some small, and I really didn't get much response other than asking, you know, people asking me for donations, which, you know, I can give a little here and there, but I wanted to do more. So I started thinking about what I could do to get loud, get in people's face, and make them stop and talk about it. And just being an election year, I thought this is the prime time because
sure.
on the other hand, watching all the debates on TV, I was getting really disgusted with all the, just the back and forth with the candidates. Nobody really dealing with anything that matters.
And the shootings.
A lot of bickering.
And the shootings and mental illness.
And the shooting coming out. I thought, I want people to talk about this, and it's important. And so I came up with the idea of doing a walk and dressing as a warrior, because people would obviously notice somebody walking down the side of the street in a warrior costume. And then the idea of the casket came forward with because of the death. And I was a little worried because I didn't want it to be morbid.
Mm.
But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you know what, this is reality.
It's true.
It
and it's bold.
Scary.
And
it
you
is
need
more,
to
it's
do
horrible.
Yeah, you need to do that. I mean, suicide is morbid.
Yeah, it's, you know, and so then I thought, how can I honor these people? And I reached out to people that I knew, and just in my community, between my social network community and friends that I know, I offered to inscribe the names of people who had lost loved ones to addiction or suicide. And just in my group alone, I had close to 80 names.
Wow.
On that casket. And then when I did my walk, I had about, I'd say, 10 to 12 people come out and ask if they could write, they would see me and they would ask if they could write the name of a loved one on there. So I had around 90 names on there, just from people that I know in my little circle, and from people I met on the walk. And, you know, when you look at it, it's really kind of stops you and makes you think, wow, I know it was bad,
absolutely.
But I know it was
sure.
that bad.
Greta, what kind of reactions did you get while you're walking 80 miles?
Some people, actually, there was a story in the Atlantic City Press, which is our local paper, that came out the day that I started. So some people had read that and saw me, and I got a lot of honks, a couple of people stopping and thanking me. I had a couple people stop and ask me what I was protesting, and, you know, I explained I'm not protesting anything, I'm bringing awareness. And I actually had one lady call the police on me, and then she actually, about an hour later, came and found me and told me that she called the police on me, and proceeded to explain all the mental health issues that she had.
Really?
Thankful for me. Yeah. So
isn't that amazing?
That
you made a difference in one person's life like that.
Yeah. But
frustratingly, but
I'm sorry.
Okay, in a frustrating way, but still, you changed her life as well.
Yeah, well, I hope I inspired her at least. And I had people in tears thanking me for doing that, and I had people in absolute shock that I would even offer to put their name, you know, their loved ones' names on there. And that to me was heartbreaking.
That's
because,
a huge, huge testament. Yeah.
Part of this is that so many people do hide in shame. They don't talk about it. You know, they've lost people and it's changed their lives. And, you know, for somebody to be so touched that I would write their name on there is just, it really kind of says it all, you know, of how much suffering there is.
And Greta Schwartz, what reception did you receive when you arrived in Trenton, New Jersey, where Governor Chris Christie resides?
Well, I was happy that there was press there.
Yay!
I thought, I don't want to do all this and nobody's there when I arrive. I had Senator Van Drew had a team there for me. He's been working with me on, we narrowed down to one specific topic regarding children that he's working with me on. So he had a group there to put kind of like a press packet together for me and to keep the word out. And so that was good. And I was happy, you know, with, I received so many private messages through Facebook and texts, you know, with people thanking me and wanting me to tell their story. So that's what it was all about.
So you felt very rewarded that you had a fulfilling journey, certainly after 3 or 4 days?
Well, I guess rewarded in the respect that I felt like it mattered, and that there's more, you know, that I can continue to go from here. There's so much more that needs to be done, and to just keep going out. I plan to go to the Democratic Convention in Philly in July and
with the casket.
Be there with the casket.
Good.
And You know, it's going to take, you know, there's so much overhaul in so many aspects. There's the overhaul in how people think about mental health. There's the overhaul in the field of mental health. There's the overhaul in the insurance coverage of mental health. I mean, there's so many aspects that need to
there's
be.
There's so many layers. You're right.
Change. You know, mm-hmm. obviously, I'm not going to be able to do that.
But one person can make a difference. And finally, on a similar note, but not directly related to mental illness, but as we alluded to before, it is connected. Congress the other day, the Democratic Congress were screaming, "Where's the bill? Where's the bill?" Because they're looking for gun control and there's nothing. I mean,
right. You
know, when is enough enough? When do enough people have to die by suicide? When do enough people have to die by, you know, guns that are not made for civilians?
Right. I know it's, you know, that's a whole other topic. And there's so many layers to that too. It's, you know, people want to just blame a crazy person with a gun. People want to, you know, you can look at the gun issues and you can look at, you know, what was going on in this person's mind. Did he get the help he needed? I think that as a society, we really need to stop, categorizing people. We really need to start understanding that especially, I mean, you look at our jail system, however crowded our jail system is, most of those people have mental health issues and need help and can't get it.
Absolutely, yeah.
People don't choose to be bad, you know? Most people, there's a reason why they're acting the way they are.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they need help for that, so.
Yeah, I mean, when I went through my depression and my brother who was depressed and eventually took his life. I mean, we don't ask for that. You don't ask for the common cold or the flu. It's just things that happen to you that most of the times are beyond your control. But when you have the tools in place for education, et cetera, then it's a whole nother outcome.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Greta Schwartz, I really take my hat off to you on many, many levels. Number one, being so bold to risk many things. I mean, you're a small business owner. You never know what kind of backlash this could have had. But putting all that aside and saying, listen, this is what I'm doing for all the people in my community, in my state, in my nation, and for, you know, the worldwide, that, you know, human beings count and every life matters. And I really applaud you for your incredible effort to walk 80 miles towing a casket and to your next endeavor going to Philadelphia for the DNC.
Well, thank you. And if I could say something, you know, the fact that I did that, I'm not a marathon runner. I've never walked. The furthest I ever walked was 20 miles, and that was to prepare for this. My point is that, you know, a lot of people want to do things, but they don't feel like they have anything to offer. And I'm saying everybody has something to offer. And, you know, if you get some idea that you think may be harebrained or crazy, you know, go for it, because it can make a huge difference.
Absolutely. Just as yours did. Greta Schwartz, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Have a great day. My name is Mark Farrell. This has been Insight on Progressive Radio Network. Thank you so much to Greta Schwartz. Oh, my God, she's an incredibly brave person. So insightful. And Christina Kuzmic. Check her out at ChristinaKuzmic.com. That's KristinaKuzmic.com. She's pretty incredible. And so are you. And if you'd like to have me speak at your school, corporation, etc., check me out at MarkFarrellMotivation.com. Have a great day.